Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. Many Milwaukee theatergoers have had the pleasure of seeing Angela Iannone act on local stages over the years. She's a talented, passionate, and consummate artist, and she brings those same qualities to her playwriting. Theater Red's production of her play, This Prison Where I Live, is currently on stage at the Theater Space in the Big Red Church on 10th and Wisconsin.
The play is one of four that Iannone has written about the great American actor Edwin Booth. Booth was one of the greatest actors of the 19th century and was immensely popular. He was also the brother of the more infamous John Wilkes Booth. After the assassination of President Lincoln and the subsequent death of John, Edwin Booth spent the rest of his life haunted by his brother's actions, even as his own fame was undiminished.
I sat down recently with Iannone and actors Corey Jefferson Hagen, who plays John Wilkes, and Jared McDerris, who plays Edwin. Iannone began by explaining the true story that inspired This Prison Where I Live.
This play is about one specific moment in time that absolutely fascinated me, and it's absolutely a real thing. In 1879, April 23rd, as a matter of fact, Shakespeare's birthday, Edwin was performing his production of Richard II at the McVicker Theater in Chicago. And the McVicker was owned by his father-in-law. His second wife was Mary McVicker. So he is performing this production of Richard II, and he gets to the Act 5 of his cut of the play, which is Richard II after he has been imprisoned and is trying to figure out his life. And he's talking about, I have been studying how I may compare this prison where I live unto the world. And he's literally in a prison, but he's also in a prison of his own making because his downfall as a king has been partly his own fault. At the moment where he is sitting on the bench and speaking this monologue, this was a moment when Edwin, the actor, was very, very still on stage. And Edwin was famous and infamous, for once he had set the blocking or the stage business, he never changed it. No matter how many years he played the role, the blocking was the same. It worked. He was comfortable with it. He remembered it. He wasn't going to change it. So he's sitting there speaking this speech, and an assassin fires two shots from the right balcony. Now, in those days, the lights in the theater were kept full up, so the house lights are on. These bullets, either one of them, should have killed him. But for some reason, in the split second before that first bullet hit the stage, Edwin stood up, which he had never done in that role ever before. He stood up. The bullet actually whiffed his wig and lodged in the set wall behind him. Then, instead of running away or ducking or something, he walked downstage and looked out into the audience. The assassin fired a second bullet, which should have hit him, but it didn't. It went right past him and lodged in the stage floor. At that point, he pointed out into the audience, shouted, "Arrest that man." Three random guys in the audience that were sitting around this assassin wrestled him to the ground. A third shot was fired into the ceiling of the theater while they were trying to disarm him. They carried him out of the theater. Edwin Booth calmed the audience and said, "We're going to take a little break. We'll start again in 15 minutes. And he walked off stage. He would never talk about why he moved. He would never explain it. People said, what prompted you to move? Why did you stand up? What was happening for you?" And he would never talk about it. This play is about why Edwin moved.
All right. So, my actors, talk a little bit about why Edwin moved without giving away too much.
It's okay.
Is it okay?
It is okay.
All right.
I think we can allow audiences to expect some things. I don't think we could give everything away even if we tried.
Okay.
There's too much in there. So by this point in time, John Wilkes has been dead for quite a while. So my appearance in this show is not exactly of this world. And so we get to play with the notion of Edwin Booth being a haunted man, which is a thing that's come up repeatedly in every Booth play that I've done with Angela through these years, all of her research. He was haunted, hung about with shades. So being able to play something or someone who is not there but is there has let a lot of this stuff that we don't have this information, so we can kind of expand upon it and go, well, maybe it's this thing. And this is, you know, what I'm doing is trying to steer him in the direction that he needs to go. Even though, am I there? Am I not? Who knows? I do.
you're not there, but you never leave.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really important point for Edwin.
For Edwin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Johnny has been dead for a long time, but Johnny's always there.
Never, ever a chance to kind of like put that aside for you.
Yeah, that's a big thing in this play in particular is the constant presence. Edwin very much wants to be left alone, ostensibly to prepare or concentrate. But it's also worth pointing out that everyone who refuses to leave him alone is also challenging fairly deep underlying beliefs he has about how he needs to be behaving right now. And how he thinks he needs to be behaving right now is usually more based on his own misconceptions of what is right and wrong, or his own misconceptions on what is the society in which he lives dictates is right and wrong. I guess you could say decorum in some ways is dictating that. In fact, a lot of the play centers around these two estranged brothers, and obviously they have other things to argue about given why one of them is no longer around. But they have a lot of things to argue about, but the arc of their conflict, I guess I'll say, both begins and ends with John Wilkes challenging Edwin's acting style, or at least what his acting style has become at this point.
My understanding of the history is that when John Wilkes was alive, mm-hmm. the two of them had a very different approach to theater.
Yes, and the two of them had very different abilities. Edwin was a classical actor, and he was the gifted one. Johnny was beautiful. Johnny was not gifted in the classics. The bulk of his repertory was actually melodrama. We actually talk about it. One of his big hits was this play, melodrama play called The Corsican Brothers, and there have been several contemporary movies of it. It's really quite a lovely story and quite thrilling. And at that time, it was largely a big special effects drama with lots of fighting and agonized lovers. Really interesting script. That was one of Johnny's big hits. He wasn't good at Shakespeare, and he really wasn't a good actor. He was handsome and had physical ability and was a startling personality, just incredibly charismatic. But that's not really an actor. Edwin was the gifted one. I mean, in this particular play, there are two ghosts who are ever present for Edwin. The ghost of his first wife, Mary Devlin, who died in 1863, and the ghost of his brother, Johnny, who died in 1865. And both of them are with him for very, very different reasons. And he actually has better relationships with those two ghosts than he does with his current wife, Mary McVicker Booth, who was a drug addict and insane. And then there is the young man who comes to bug him in the theater and is a really annoying fan, and a dangerous fan. And I think even if one is not an actor, one is familiar with those scenarios where someone who becomes obsessed with a figure that they think an actor is and wants them to fulfill some task for them as a fan that is dangerous and frightening and unreasonable.
The whole stalking thing.
Very much a stalking thing. Yeah.
So pulling all of this together, this is number four in the trilogy? Is that
there
right?
There are four plays.
Yeah.
This one was written second. It takes place in 1879, which chronologically puts it after The Seeds of Banquo, which Theater Red produced in 2015.
And which we talked about.
Which we did talk about. Mm-hmm. So chronologically, this one is third in the four produced plays, but I wrote it second in the progression through the four current Booth scripts.
I guess what I'm trying to get at with that is that we're getting this amazingly complete picture of who Edwin Booth was through these scripts and through these particular things, even if, like in this play, what happened, we don't know what actually happened.
We do.
But we don't know why.
Yes. This is my why.
This is your why.
Mm-hmm.
And so why do we care about Edwin Booth still? Because we obviously do. People in theater, people even outside of theater who are fascinated by this genius.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can give you my own thoughts about that.
And I want you guys to come in on
absolutely.
That, too.
Absolutely. I am using Edwin Booth as a skin through which I explore social issues, issues of art, questions of identity, gender identity, racial equality. I'm slipping into that skin, and I am looking at the historical facts about his life and the people that he knew, and finding ways to have conversations that interest me about all of those things. Because the 19th century is more like us than unlike us. All of the same issues that we are exploring right now, we were exploring in the 1800s, just in a slightly slower way of talking to each other about it because we didn't have the immediacy of social media. But Edwin Booth is alive at the time when photography is beginning, and he dies at the time that recording is beginning. So we are defining celebrity in America in brand new ways during his entire career. So the idea that a celebrity belongs to their public, the idea that people in the public eye should behave differently, might be held to different standards, might be tortured by that at the same time that that's their livelihood, so they can't walk away from it. Issues of gender. We have been doing cross-dressing in America since the late 1700s. And by 1825, there had already been a female Hamlet on the New York stage. But it was looked at with a lot of side eye. Like, what are these women doing? Why aren't they content with playing in skirts or playing roles that define their femininity in a certain way? Well, we were exploring those same things in the 19th century and beginning to say, no, I want to play some men's roles because the women's roles don't satisfy me. And people like Edwin Booth are taking roles away from women wearing pants and saying, I would rather have a man do it because it makes me more comfortable. And at the same time as he's casting male witches in Macbeth. So how is gender performed? How comfortable are we with things crossing over? He's operating in the 1800s, which is an uncomfortable time for American history in terms of performing race. So many fabulous social, political things happen. Edwin Booth is at the center of almost all of it. Art, poetry, politics, and defining ourselves as Americans because he was the first international classical star. He went over to England, and although they didn't like him much, the critics didn't like him, the audiences came and watched this American performing their Shakespeare. In a time when Americans are saying, well, we have every right to perform Shakespeare the way we want to, without an accent. He goes to Germany and is an enormous star performing in bilingual productions in Germany. He performed with the Italian tragedian Tommaso Salvini here in America. He performed all over the country, anywhere the railroad would go. And everyone connected with him. All of the women actor managers, all the women I've gotten to know that were an important part of American theatrical history that I was only able to find because of their connection with Edwin Booth, that because they were connected with him, somebody kept information, somebody kept a program, somebody wrote a bio, a critic showed up at a show. We should care about him because we can have conversations about things that were important to him are now still important to us. And looking through the lens of the past is sometimes easier because it puts it far enough away that we don't feel threatened and we're able to examine it in a slower way. And I think that the social strictures also help us, that there are manners and there are distances that you stand apart from people that you don't know, and there are ways that you treat the other gender that allow for surprising stage situations when those rules are broken. But when we see people in these clothes, we are expecting a certain kind of behavior. When that behavior is upset, we can spot that more easily.
Do either of you have anything to jump in on that with?
Oh, there was so much in there.
I
don't know what more I can add. I mean, besides the fact that Edwin Booth is interesting because he led us in the direction that we've moved in theater. We wouldn't have a dark house if it wasn't for Edwin Booth. You'd still have the lights up. There would be no distinction between the world that you're living in the play and the audience. So there are all these small things that we take for granted now that are thanks to him. So being able to look at all of this and go, okay, so yes, all of these things that Angela has just gone through, but also all of these small things that we think are so normal were not normal to him, but he made them normal, is incredibly interesting to me. And being able to go to her and be like, I have a question about this thing, and it doesn't matter where we're at. If it's in any way related to Edwin Booth, we can get her on a 30-minute to an hour-long tangent connected to literally everything and everyone he's ever worked with, and you walk out of it knowing more than you did before, and you're really pleased about it. Learning about Edwin and caring about Edwin just means that we're not giving up on the stuff that happened before. We're continuing to grow and expand upon it, and we're also learning about someone who is incredibly important in the world of theater and the world in general.
It's really talking about him as, a link to what was normal then versus what is normal now. And yeah, it is interesting, like you say, like Lights Out, for example, is normal now. But what I really appreciate is that like these revolutionary steps that he took were not necessarily considered normal for most of and sometimes the entirety of his career. Mm-hmm. And like the things that we consider revolutionary, like, you know, we're all raised on, I'll just say Disney movies, for example, where like somebody causes some kind of revolution and then they become a celebrated hero like right away, usually in their early 20s or even teens. Whereas in reality, when you are, I guess I'll say fighting for an artistic revolution of some kind, very often what you accomplish isn't appreciated until long after you're dead. It's gratifying, intriguing, exciting to play one of those people who like causes this artistic revolution, and then also the gratification from the outside of seeing the lack of appreciation that can receive during their own lifetime. In some respects, he was
right.
he was the first international superstar. So
yeah, Edwin retired from the stage after the unfortunate incident in D.C., and he was gone from the stage for 8 months. During that time, most of his family was placed under arrest. Edwin was the only one with the name of Booth that was not arrested. And it was only because he was Edwin Booth and everyone loved him and revered him. And it's like, no, we know he, of all of the family, had nothing to do with this because most of the family was under arrest for suspicion of conspiracy in the assassination. But he went into seclusion. He went into hiding. He would only go out at night, and he would only go out even at night surrounded by a group of his friends because they feared that someone was going to kill him. And he did receive death threats for the rest of his natural life, that everywhere he went, there would usually be a letter waiting at the theater, or they would arrive at his hotel and he would open them and it would be a death threat. And sometimes there would be letters to the editor in newspapers saying Edwin Booth had better not appear on stage, because if he does, there will be trouble. And how dare he? How dare he perform? So he was in seclusion for 8 months. And when he finally came back in 1866, he opened with Hamlet, which was his most beloved role and the one that people really wanted to see him in. And he was afraid that it wasn't going to work, that they were going to boo him from the stage. But according to the accounts, there was a 5-minute ovation when the curtain came up and discovers the character of Hamlet on stage during the coronation, waiting for the king and queen to enter. There was a 5-minute ovation, which at first he thought was booing. But they were applauding. And it went on, according to people who were there, for 5 minutes. And he never acknowledged applause from the house. But according to the stories, he looked up and they could see that his eyes were filled with tears, and he nodded his head and then dropped his gaze again and waited for the play to continue, and then never looked back, you know, continued to perform. But no one was allowed to speak his brother's name in his presence. And if someone did, tried to ask a question or involve him in a conversation, he would abruptly leave the room. And that person would never be allowed anywhere near him ever again. It was a burden that he continually carried.
And which we will see played out in some way.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because you can't bring Johnny on stage and not have both the audience and all the characters on stage aware. This play takes place in 1879, and Johnny died in 1865. So there's a whole long history of just carrying that big, big vault of silence around with you, the things we do not speak.
Angela Iannone is an actor and playwright. Her play, This Prison Where I Live, is currently on stage in the theater space in the Big Red Church on 10th and Wisconsin. It's produced by Milwaukee's Theater Red.
Jared McDerris plays Edwin Booth, and Corey Jefferson Hagen plays John Wilkes Booth. There's more information about the play at wuwm.com.